You're listening to a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, dedicated to bringing podcasters together for the greater good of gaming. It's sort of like Voltron, but with better lip syncing. Find out more at dicetowernetwork.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 255.
Hello and welcome everybody to the show. Super excited to just keep plowing along and doing more episodes of the Family Gamers Podcast. Are you excited?
I'm excited.
I'm excited too. And guess who else is excited is a friend of the Family Gamers who has been on the Family Gamers Podcast before. This is an odd numbered show. We have a guest. This week we have our friend Dustin Tsats from Board Gaming with Education. How are you doing, Dustin?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to be here. And wow, you guys passed 250. That's awesome. Congratulations.
It's pretty crazy.
We've been doing this for a long time now.
Yeah, we're old.
We were old when we started.
I mean, we were old when we started, but now we're even extra old. Well, speaking of things that are really old, I have a fact about the number 255. Are you ready?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. Dustin, have you ever heard of a game called Pac-Man?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just checking. Okay. Do you know how many levels there are in classic Pac-Man?
I'm going to guess 255.
He is a
but I have
good,
no idea.
Good guesser. So it turns out that when they first made Pac-Man, they made a conscious decision to store all of the level counting for Pac-Man in one byte. And in a byte, there are, as we all know, 8 bits. Yes. And so the maximum number that you can count up to with a single byte is 255.
Oh, wow.
You can go from 0 to 255.
You can go from 0 to 255. And then you need a 9th bit at 1 and everything else at zeros to show 256. So if they had used just two bytes, we could have had 65,000 levels of Pac-Man. But they only wanted to use one. So there are 255 levels to classic Pac-Man. And that is my fact about the number 255. Man.
All right. I like it.
You
suitably
like it?
Suitably nerdy.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
How many levels have you ever gotten to?
Probably like 4 or 5. It's crazy.
You said like 5.
Same. How much you can fit on video games now. It's insane. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, isn't there like the whole thing with what's his name, the guy who supposedly beat Pac-Man, but then there was a big thing because they said he cheated or something, and
yeah.
There was a documentary about it, which is I don't know.
Oh man,
I don't know. Someday we'll have to have Ken Gagne on the show, and he'll know all about that.
Yes,
he's a friend of ours who does some video game podcast stuff.
Oh, cool.
But sadly, I don't actually know the answer to that.
I don't either.
But yeah, 255 Pac-Man levels.
It makes me appreciate how far we've come with video games in particular and computers in general, that nobody's concerned anymore with, like, well, is this information going to take 1 byte of memory or 2 bytes of memory?
Yeah. I was watching when Mortal Kombat, when the new game was coming out, they were talking about, like, they had to reuse some of the character skins because they couldn't fit enough. Like, they ran out of memory for the game.
Yeah.
So they,
yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, and it's things like, I mean, when you get to the really old stuff, like original Super Mario Brothers, like the sprite for Mario is like 4 sections that they just kind of replace parts of, depending on whether he's jumping or not, because it's more space efficient to do that.
Wow.
Like some of the stuff that they did was really, really amazing.
Yeah.
So
awesome.
But anyway, we're not here to talk about video games. We're here to talk about board games. And we are also here to talk about the fact that we have been sponsored by First Move Financial.
That's right. Did you know that there is a U.S. law that allows every American to check their credit reports with each of the 3 major credit bureaus each year for free? You don't have to sign up for a service. You don't have to pay a monthly fee. Just go to annualcreditreport.com. It is important to check your credit reports so you know if someone has opened accounts in your name or if a creditor is misreporting an old debt, and see if you have accounts you forgot to close that may be hurting your credit score. First Move Financial has a blog post that we'll link to in the show notes about how to read your credit reports. If you're overwhelmed by debt, hiring a financial advisor may not be right for you, but First Move Financial is still happy to have a 15-minute phone call to get you going in the right direction and point you towards free resources. Go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers and set up a time today to chat.
Thanks so much, First Move, for sponsoring this episode of the show.
Yay!
All right. So, we are going to talk about Board Gaming with Education, which is your site and podcast and video streaming thing
mission.
And store and like all this stuff. It was a little bit smaller last time we talked, but now it's much, much larger. It is this all-encompassing thing. But that's going to be the second half of the show.
Yes.
What do we talk about first half of the show?
In the first half, we talk about what we've been playing.
Pac-Man. We already went over this.
We have not been playing Pac-Man. Let's talk about some board games that we've been playing.
All right. Dustin, what have you been playing lately? What's on your table?
Oh, man. Let's see. I'm trying to think of some board games I've been playing recently. I mean, I've been playing a lot with my students, but maybe we'll talk about those later. One that I've been playing personally isn't a board game, but I've been learning more about is Magic the Gathering.
That counts.
It's not, I don't know.
It's a tabletop game. Yeah. I think it's acceptable.
But that's, I kind of started playing again, and I'll share the reason why at the end of the episode. But yeah, that's the one game that I've been playing a lot recently.
Well, our 10-year-old has also really dove headfirst into Magic the Gathering.
I went through, I culled out all my expensive stuff, I sold all of that, and I just gave everything to him. And that was just like, I might as well have pushed him off the cliff of Magic, because he's just, now every gift he gets from everybody is like a pack, or a commander pack, or a crazy pack, or all these different, I don't know, whatever.
Or and a you gift can card to go to the local game store
right?
to buy
packs. Yeah, exactly. It's just, it's like this all income, but at the same time, like he sits in his room for hours on end, just like flipping through cards and making decks, and he's like, Dad, play with me. I'm like, all right, sure.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Beat down, I have two decks of Magic cards over there on the game shelf somewhere. They're 20 years old.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I think he's up to making like five different decks now or something ridiculous like that.
Yeah, it's, I mean, look, it's
fine.
It's fine.
As a hobby,
it's great
it's
fun,
fine.
You know. I mean, we've kind of talked about like, I'd prefer he doesn't play black. Black stuff is kind of gross anyway. So that's really not a big deal. That's it.
Yeah.
And he plays Magic.
Yeah. I mean, it's a hobby that I never thought I'd get back into.
when did you get out?
In high school. So like 2004, maybe 2003.
That was like when I stopped too. So like that would be like Tempest and Invasion and Torment. Like that was right around the time when I was getting out of Magic the Gathering. That were those sets.
I love how you talk about getting out, like an escape from a cult.
Listen. How many times have we talked about the fact that if you get your kids hooked on magic, they won't have any money for drugs? Like, it's true.
True.
Yeah.
But anyway. All right. Well, so let's talk about what some stuff that we've been playing, Anitra.
Sure.
So we played some Zombie Kids Evolution today.
We did. Again.
Again.
I should say, you played with the children.
Yeah.
And then they're like, we want to play another game. So then I played with the children. Because the only downside to Zombie Kids Evolution is you can only have four players.
Right.
Hmm.
But our kids are still really, really loving the nature of this game. It's so simple at its core, but there's always more achievements to go for, more things to unlock, and more envelopes to open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are more envelopes to open. Super good stuff.
Yeah.
Is it, so I'm not familiar with the game. Is it like a campaign style game? I mean, I know of the game, but I haven't.
So it's not really a campaign game, but I would call it a legacy game.
Okay.
Every play of it really stands alone, unlike other campaign and legacy games I've played, where you could literally just pull in a whole new group of people and be like, okay, here are the rules, go.
Cool.
But every time you play, if you win the game, you'll get to put extra little stickers on various achievements and move faster towards opening envelopes. But thankfully, you get to put one little sticker on the progress chart every time you play, regardless of whether you won or not.
Oh, that's nice.
So you're still moving forward. It's really well designed as a legacy game, or I guess you could call it a campaign game, for kids.
There's no campaign. Campaigns require narratives.
Fine.
It's a legacy game. It's not a campaign.
Legacy game. Because you can drop in and drop out. And there's always this motivation to keep playing and keep moving forward, even if you're not doing well, because you know that more things will be coming.
Right. In fact, the reason why we had to play a second time tonight was because we were within just like one or two brains grasp of the next envelope, and our 10-year-old really, really wanted to open it.
Oh, cool.
So, very motivated by achievements.
Oh, absolutely. So I think there's like maybe 16 envelopes in this game, and we just opened envelope 10.
10, yeah.
So yeah, there's been a lot of plays of Zombie Kids Evolution. There will be a lot more.
Yes, there will. What else have we been playing? I have been playing some Tumbletown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked about it a little bit last week, and we released a review
Last week. Yep.
Last week as well. It's a fun little game.
Yeah, I like it. It's a little bit disappointing, but mostly that's because there's a lot of setup and my kids are not super great at trying to synthesize all of the rules involved, because this is a game where you're making buildings with dice, but there's also drafting from a central market to get building plans. And the way you put your buildings together on the mat, you can get more points or less points. And the various buildings have powers you can use every turn, so there's a little bit of engine building with there. And none of these things are complex in and of themselves, but kind of putting them all together makes it just feel like a lot.
It's almost like there's one too many mechanics.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, yeah, in Tumbletown, but yeah, it's still pretty.
But it's pretty and it's fun, yeah. And I like that you physically build with the dice. That's not something you often see in games
except for,
of any
snowman
kind, really.
Dice, but that's very, very that's different.
But that's the thing. This isn't a dexterity game in any way.
Right.
The building with the dice is literally just a sort of a side note to everything else you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anything else that you've been playing, Dustin?
Like I said, I can throw out some games I've been playing with my students.
Sure.
I mean, I want to say we did like a dozen games this summer, probably. Wavelength, just one.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. We played this game called Builder, but there's a remake of it by Simply Fun, and it starts with an A. I always forget the name of it. I might have to check my TikTok because someone commented on the actual name. What else have we played? We played Super Fight, played right. Snake Oil in the spring. So those two games I used to teach Persuasion.
Okay.
The components of Persuasion, Ethos, Logos, and Pathos. Mm-hmm. And okay. Looking at commercials and how commercials kind of try to persuade us to do certain things, mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. purchase their products.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm trying to remember what else we've done. But those are a lot of games that I've played recently are more party-style games because they just lend themselves to the classroom a little bit better.
Yeah, yeah.
In the spring, we were fully online, so a lot of those games I was able to modify for an online environment. Wits and Wagers, another one, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Sure, nice.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Right. Well, the only other thing that we have been playing, or at least I have been playing, we picked up Trails last week for our show on not really miniaturizing board games, but whether or not smaller versions of games were worth it or not. So we picked up Trails as part of a research kind of experiment to go along with that, which I didn't mind because anytime I can buy a board game and blame it on research, it works for me. But we've been playing a lot of it because it's really good.
Yeah, I showed it to the kids because we bought it while they were away at camp. And I was like, guys, I think you're really going to enjoy this. And it was like, why would we play this instead of Parks, Mom? And I'm just like, just wait. Like, we can actually play this during the day and it's not long enough for hurt feelings and somebody getting bored and whatever. But it's got a lot of that same, you know, back and forth that you get in Parks. I've really been enjoying that. It's kind of a shame that some of the best art in the game is on these photo cards, which once you get a photo card, you're keeping it hidden for the rest of the game. And I'm just like, I want to show off all these pretty photos.
Yeah, I will say that there are less opportunities to see lots of the art in the game in Trails as opposed to Parks, because in Parks, you've got the face-up national parks. And right. You get to look at them, and they're always there on the tableau to be drafted from. And that's the one thing that's kind of missing from Trails. And missing is in air quotes because, I mean, obviously it was a deliberate decision to shrink the footprint of the game, right? But it is definitely a significant difference. And, you know, for a company like Keymaster, who always puts out such excellent quality products with such fantastic art, you know, working with you know, Henry Audubon and the society that makes all those national parks, 51st, whatever it is. Anyway, just the assets they have at their disposal are fantastic. And so it is a little bit of a shame that we don't see those when we play Trails. But
yeah, it's still pretty in what you get. Do get to see.
That's true. And the last game is Camp Pinetop. We are in the middle of evaluating this game for a review very, very soon. I don't know if it's going to be the same day this podcast comes out or if it's going to be the week after. I have no idea yet, but this is a wonderful, wonderful little game. I really can't wait to talk about it a little bit more. Have you seen this game, Camp Pinetop, Dustin, at all?
No, I don't think so.
In Camp Pinetop, you are basically a Boy Scout troop, but instead of like a pack that has like a mascot of like a wolf or a bear or whatever, like you actually play as little
tiny fox
adorable fox
things.
People or whatever. and the point of the game is that you're traveling around in the forest, which is these randomly laid out tiles, and you are getting merit badges, which kind of level your character up and give you more abilities to get
more
merit
badges.
They level
your whole troop up.
Oh, sorry. Yes, because you have multiple
little guys.
Meeple guys, but they're not meeples because they're cut out differently. Foxes. Anyway, but the point is that you are trying to level up enough stuff to get the right amount of points to get to the end, and you have all the merit badges leveled up. I forgot the end condition.
So you're trying to get to like the highest badge level. And
yeah,
the first
yeah.
person who
I keep wanting to say
there,
Eagle Scout, but I can't say Eagle Scout because that's not what
it is. It's not owl. Maybe it's bear or something like that.
I don't know what
you want to get to the highest level of merit badge.
Right. You want to get to the highest level of rank because there's a couple different like combinations of merit badge types that you can get to get to that rank.
To get to the next
rank. So it's not like it's fixed at you have to do these 8 things or whatever.
That's true. Fair. There's 12 merit badges that you can earn, and all 12 of them can also be leveled up once. So all of these help you on your path to, you know, leveling up your rank, but every badge also has a special power. So this is where you get a little bit of that kind of engine building feel in there. The easier badges are really just a one-time immediate reward. But then there are others that have ongoing abilities that make it easier and easier to earn more badges.
So there's really this kind of like crescendo effect to what you're doing as your pack. As you kind of get through the game, you're like, oh, well, now I can have this ability, and now I have that ability. And depending on where you go on the tile forest board thing, you kind of know which places are going to give you what resources to get what merit badges. So you can kind of tailor your travel to get the things that you want to get based on what your goals are.
One of the things I like about the game is that it could so easily be one of those multiplayer solitaire games where you're all just kind of racing for resources and who can do this best. But because this is designed to be like scout troops and you're moving around in the forest, if you're going somewhere where there are other scouts not of your troop, then you're sharing resources with them. I say sharing. Basically, you're giving them resources as payment for landing where they already are.
You're paying their toll.
But it makes the decisions more interesting because sometimes, like, you know what? It's totally worth it. I'm just going to go through there. I'll pay you the card on the way. Fine, whatever. And other times you're like, maybe if I wait a little longer and work on some other stuff, they'll go away. Maybe they won't. I don't know.
And then it makes you incentivized to pay attention to the other players, because if you kind of have a sense that they are going to want to be where you are, like, maybe you move your other guys around for a while and leave that guy there.
Yeah, so that you can get just a little bit of extra stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's Camp Pinetop from Talon Strikes Games. It's fun.
Awesome.
It's a nice one for summer, too, because it's basically a Boy Scout.
Oh, yeah.
It is. I wouldn't say the art is amazing in it, but it is super thematic. Like, everything about the game is super thematic, and I really, really like it. The first time we played it, Anitra and I had gone away to, like, a tiny house, like, cabin in the middle of the woods. And
I saw some pictures.
It was perfect.
We're just in the middle of the woods.
Yeah, it was perfect.
Except in the pictures, it's summer, and it was not summer for us.
No, it was 7 degrees outside.
The dead of winter.
Yeah. All right, so why don't we do this? Why don't we take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk all about Dustin and everything that he's doing with his life forever. No, just kidding. We'll be right back.
A pizza party with my friends, but then alien robots crash the party and challenge our group to a puzzle. This is a snap review for Robots Ate Our Pizza. Robots Ate Our Pizza is a cooperative card game for 2 to 6 players designed by the Donahoe family with art by Angela Trusak. It's best for ages 8 and up, and it takes about 20 minutes to play. You can buy Robots Ate Our Pizza at robotsateourpizza.com. or through Amazon, for about $15. So let's start with talking about the art in this game. The art in Robots Ate Our Pizza is fine and functional. The robots are really cute until you see them eating the pizza. I found that there were 2 really weird decisions in the art. One is that the robot name is only on the 1 of each suit. The card numbers are only on the upper left of each card, meaning they're only really visible
in one orientation. And that leaves us to keep rotating all the cards every time we pick up a brand new hand. Let's talk about the mechanics and how you play the game. Since these robots have crashed your pizza party and challenged you to a contest with your pizza on the line, they assign you four different set collection tasks. At the beginning of each task, shuffle the deck, then give every player five cards. The first player will select one from their hand and play it face up to the table. Every other player then plays one card from their respective hands in turn order. Once every player has played one card, they pass their hand of cards to the left. Then, every player plays a card again in turn order, and then passes their hand again. Once all players have four cards in front of them, discard the remaining one, and it's time to score each player's hand. There are three ways that the cards on the table score. Sets of matching numbers, sets of matching colors, runs like 1, 2, 3, or 4, 5, 6, in any combination of colors. Some cards may be part of more than one set. You need to score them for every set that they're in. But here's the catch. As a group, you're aiming for a different score for each task. In the first task, you're looking for a combined high score. But then in the second task, a combined low score. Then you want to maximize the difference between the highest player score and the lowest player score. And then in the last task, you want to minimize the difference between all players' scores. Confused yet? You're also not supposed to communicate what's in your hand or what you're trying to collect. After each task, compare your team's score to the rubric on the task card like this, and see how much pizza the robots will eat. You flip over each pizza card and see the robots eating pizza on the other side. Will you have any pizza left after your four tasks are complete? So, what did we expect out of this game? Robots Ate Our Pizza is really cute. We expected it would have an educational kind of feel to it and be a fun game to play with our kids. I was really puzzled at the concept, though. How do you turn card drafting and set collection into a cooperative game? So let's ask one of our pizza experts about the game. So Elliot, what did you think about Robots Ate Our Pizza?
It was a fun game, but it was really, really hard to get to the goals.
Yeah, it was pretty tough to explain how to best get there without just telling everybody what kind of cards they should play. So that gets to our surprises. Robots Ate Our Pizza is educational, but not really in the way we were expecting. There's not really a whole lot of math here, although the scoring of runs and color pairs and number pairs does feel very mathy. We had to bend the no communication rule and discuss a lot of the probability with our kids. The way the cooperation worked was really surprising. It feels kind of like The Crew. In that game, your group is attempting to complete tasks or missions with minimal communication, but it's a trick-taking game. This is a drafting and set collection game, but you still need to look around at the table and figure out both which cards are good for you and which cards you really do want to pass to your teammates. Unfortunately, Robots Ate Our Pizza also feels a little unfinished. Part of this is the simplicity of the art, but a larger part is that there's no real storyline or really strong theme to hook us. Why are we trying for different outcomes on the different tasks? The Donahoe family has done a great job with creating several more sets of tasks, for 24 in total, which change up how the scoring works. Red doesn't score, or certain color combinations score negative instead of positive. It's just kind of a okay, now we're trying this different kind of task, instead of having some real reason or motivation to move forward and try new things. This lack of a hook meant it was really hard for our kids to stay engaged with the game, and the adults liked it a little bit more than the kids. In the end, Robots Ate Our Pizza is a great way to pass 20 minutes or so while teaching kids more about planning and probability. It's not our favorite, but I do think we'll be keeping it around for a little while to keep working on some of those skills in a reasonably fun way. So, pizza expert Elliot, what do you think we should rate Robots Ate Our Pizza?
I think we should rate it 2.5 pizza slices out of 5.
And that's Robots Ate Our Pizza in a snap. And we're back. We're here with Dustin, and we're going to talk about board gaming with education.
Yeah, so we had you on episode 179, which, if I do my quick math, was 76 episodes ago. We figured it out before. It was about 18 months ago that you were on. It was right before COVID started to
February 2020.
Really horrible thing. And we talked about board gaming with education and kind of how this all started for you, right? So you were already using board games in the classroom, and then you moved to Taiwan, and that's when you kind of discovered the modern board gaming hobby.
Yeah, and then we moved back to LA. So I guess when I was on the show at that time, we were starting events in LA. We had maybe ran a few board game nights, or we're starting to do some content-based tabletop game classes. We didn't get a chance to do one yet because, like you mentioned, that was just before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And we were still kind of growing a community here in LA. We had just moved back maybe like 3 or 4 months before. But then, yeah, this past couple of years, a lot has happened for myself and everyone else.
So you talked before the break about some of the games that you've been playing like this summer with your students. Some of those were games that you were able to adapt for kind of a digital, like Zoom kind of experience. And we've had some of that too. You know, we've played games with the Charity Board Gamer. We've played like Wavelength and Blank Slate and some games like that over Zoom or over other digital tools. So you kind of talked about modifying games to make them suitable for your classroom, which is different from making them suitable for a digital space. So like, can you give us some examples of maybe some of what you did there?
Yeah, so I guess Board Game with Education started selling tabletop games as a store online in October/November 2020. And with that, we wanted to bring tabletop games to classrooms, learning environments, whether that's in a classroom or at home, and designing resources for that. So we were looking at both designing resources for when eventually things go back to in person, and also what kind of resources we can develop now for teachers. And one of the first games we looked to, so I mentioned this before we hopped on, like party games are great for both the classroom and for modifying them for online learning, because you can modify a lot of the rules. You don't have to play an entire game. We looked at Nerd Words. Nerd Words is a really good one that we developed for the classroom, and then also included some digital learning resources that would help you use it in a remote setting. So, oh man, I'm drawing a blank on the program, but there's a lot of like teaching programs, and this one in particular, maybe someone listening that's a teacher will know exactly what I'm talking about. But essentially, students can watch the PowerPoint presentation and interact with it on their own screens. And we developed a presentation specifically for Nerd Words for that game. So students can play the game essentially on their own screens while the teacher would present it. With their own, and whether it's the camera and then also with the screen.
Very cool.
That is pretty neat. So who do you teach? Like what's your grade level that you're teaching?
Yeah, so I am actually, this next year will be the first year since I started my career in education, which I won't be in a school full time. I'll be running a running club this fall. I think that's what I'm going to be doing because I've been working with Board Game with Education full time this past year. So I was doing part time with high school this last year. Mm-hmm. I've worked with all levels though, really, like from university all the way down to 3 years old. It was only a couple weeks for working with 3 year olds though. So yeah, I'm not like no expert.
The teaching experience is roughly the same between
just about. But yeah, the high school this past year, and then, I mean, early on in the pandemic, it was middle school. So I worked at a middle school, and then this past spring, I was teaching a couple board game courses. And this summer, I taught a board game course. And then this fall, I'm just completely taking a step back from teaching in a formal like setting at a school, because I want to focus that efforts and those efforts on teaching for Board Game with Education. Mm.
So let's kind of, I guess, plumb some of the depths of what you're doing over at the site. So we talked about some of this programming and stuff like that. What is an edugamer expert?
Yeah, so I would consider myself an edugamer expert. That is a term I coined, though. We coined at Board Game with Education. Just someone who is familiar with using games for learning and what is entailed with that, like game-based learning, gamification, the steps required to kind of implement some of those things efficiently and effectively.
I mean, I think that's worthwhile putting your little edugamer and your special learning tag on the stuff that I see on your website, because yes, I would call myself a game schooler at this point, but I very much feel like I'm kind of flailing around in the dark saying, like, this game could be educational. Yes, let's do that. And sometimes it works and sometimes it really doesn't.
In fact, you know, I'm going to point this out to your shame, Anitra, not really, but what the heck. We've talked about Periodic from Genius Games a lot.
Well, yes.
As a great game to facilitate learning. And I see here that there is a badge on Board Gaming with Education where there is at-home learning resources available for Periodic.
So what you're saying is I should have gotten those back in the spring when
yes.
we were doing the Periodic table
yes.
and playing Periodic.
Yes, obviously Roger would have been very, very happy to help you with this. Here, look at that. Free PDF you can click on. Ideas for using Periodic in the classroom right on the Board Gaming with Education website.
All right.
Yeah, Roger's actually our science expert. He's a retired science teacher. He's kind of the one that helped me get this started in October. We started in July last year, so we've been doing this for a year now. But we really didn't start carrying games, and what we carried was very limited in the holiday season last year, and we've been growing steadily. But yeah, Periodic and a lot of the chemistry based games are great, because with that skill set, it's a lot of, at least what they teach in school, there's some rote memorization involved in having to learn those compounds and
yeah.
balancing elements. Like, that's the rote memorization of it. But then also with some games, you can kind of see, I'm trying to think of a game, maybe Ion kind of has some. It shows some practical uses of what compounds are made in the, yeah. up in the real world. So, yeah, I think science games are great for that, because it kind of tackles both the practical approach and seeing how it looks like in the real world as a board game, quote unquote. And then it does have that rote memorization that games are excellent at helping with learning too.
I have especially appreciated the Genius Games for that. They're certainly not the only ones, but they're the easiest and most obvious out there for working on science themed
right,
stuff, especially.
Right. So we've talked a little bit about the website, and I've pointed out that we did not make use of the Periodic resources that we should have. One of the things that I think is really cool about the way that BoardGamingWithEducation.com is organized is that you have everything broken out in different ways. So you can get to games by content area, like art-based games, ELA games, foreign language, math-based, whatever, or by grade level, or just by some other topics. Like, I can go in and look for games that have something to do with coding, with computer coding, which, no surprise, Potato Pirates is in there. We've had them on the show before. But, like, I mean, there's all sorts of options here that it really depends on just how you're trying to find something to fit whatever your need is at the time, right? Like, at the beginning of the year, it might be like, I have a third grader, what am I going to do with them? And then later on, it might be like, we're in science right now. He's really struggling. She's really struggling. Let's go find a game that maybe could make it a little bit less painful of an experience.
Or on the flip side, maybe you have a third grader, but when it comes to science, they're always looking for more.
Mm.
And so you say, okay, let me just look at all the science games.
Yeah.
And I would have thought that memorizing and beginning to understand the periodic table was honestly too much for a fourth grader. And yet here we are. He memorized a song to get him up through, I believe, element 80 or so.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And he was really taken with it. And that's part of why we ended up playing a lot of Periodic, because that would not have come to mind for a fourth grader. But he was all about it.
So I'll ask you this question, Dustin. If indeed you are spending the next year focusing on Board Gaming with Education, that has to mean that you have big plans.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, that's how I mentioned Magic the Gathering. Our big plan is to open a brick and mortar store in quarter one of 2021. We're still saving up because it does cost a bit of money to do that and doing some planning. So six months is kind of an aggressive timeline. I was being more aggressive even before that, but I've kind of molded over. And I mean, this is something we've been planning kind of in the background for a few months already too. Essentially, it stems from our mission of really wanting to create a community and share this idea of tabletop games for learning. And I think having a physical space would really help cater that experience by providing like classes and after school programs, summer camps and all that, all that good stuff that we could do in a physical space. But yeah, that's kind of one big focus of the next 6 months. And we'll be creating a little bit different content too. We'll still have our podcast, Board Game with Education, but our YouTube channel is going to be a broader approach with tabletop games. My wife, Grace, and I, we actually have a video planned where we're going to open some Pokemon cards. And I haven't played Pokemon since like high school. So I've been researching a lot over the past couple of months to learn a bit more. And we do carry Pokemon cards now too, because I do see a lot of benefits in that game for learning too. I mean, I've been tutoring a student in Taiwan since he was 5, and he loves Pokemon. And I started teaching him the alphabet with Pokemon, and now we're all the way up to reading Harry Potter. But I use Pokemon. I send him stamps for every 10 lessons. He gets a sticker in the mail. So just using that kind of motivation. And then we actually played a game of Pokemon online, the card game, because he was kind of having a rough time in school. And we kind of took a break from the lessons. And we did some, like, in the game, you practice mental math. You also have the flavor text that I can ask him to read as a language learner, too.
So I have to ask this question because I know this is something that my kids would be interested in. On the Board Game with Education website, you talk about, and you've talked about it as well during the show, the summer programs and the teaching that you've been doing. Are these all in-person things? Do you plan on, I know you're just talking about the brick and mortar store, which I think you said quarter one 2022 is the plan for that. Do you plan on doing like online class kind of stuff at all, or is it strictly going to be in person?
We're looking towards in person. This summer we've had some like marketing issues. I wasn't very good at marketing because things were still up in the air as far as like in person and also like a space. We didn't really have a space solidified yet. So we're looking to do something more in the coming months, like once a week type of stuff, where we do like maybe a Pokemon night or tabletop game night. But again, we're still looking for a space in the area. So, and it's a little bit more challenging because of the pandemic to find a space to do this stuff. Right.
So it started with just having board games in the classroom, moved on to modern board games, blossomed into this website with a podcast and a web store and all this other stuff. And now you've full on punted your default career.
Yeah, pretty much.
for Board Gaming with Education, like, I have two questions. And the first one is, what is your passion that drives you like through all this stuff? What has been the central thread that has moved you from step to step during this process? And like, where do you want this to go?
That's a great question. Something I've been thinking about a lot recently, because opening a brick and mortar store, like I said, it's expensive and it's a big risk. Well, I would say it's a calculated risk, but it is a risk, and it takes a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of money. But I just really enjoy tabletop games and games for learning in general. I mean, I play video games too, but I prefer pushing tabletop games for learning because it's more of the social aspect. It's getting people around a table. It's that interaction with players at the table, but really bringing more people into the hobby, because one, when I introduce tabletop games for learning, they're not aware, like the general, I would say the majority of the general public is not aware of the modern aspect of tabletop games and what they can do. So it's bridging that gap with also teaching teachers and parents the idea that you can then use these games to target different benefits. Like we talked about wavelength. The whole game is like 20 minutes, but you can play around in like less than 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Playing that game once a week in your classroom is huge for developing relationships with your students as a teacher. Like just something like that. Doing something like that is really, it goes a long way, I think, too.
So would you use wavelength outside of the scope of the actual teaching experience, but just to generate rapport, for example?
Yeah, definitely. Oh. I think that would be huge for, I mean, teachers have advisory periods all the time where we're kind of looking for how to spend 5-10 minutes. Maybe we have to wait a few minutes to line up for a program in the auditorium or whatever. And just doing something like that is really cool. I mean, a lot of teachers kind of do stuff like that already, but just coming up with other ideas and other games you can kind of use is always fun.
So, I mean, that certainly is a huge value add in the educational space for board games, is to provide those filler opportunities and also to actually be educational things. Obviously, we talked about periodic, and I know you've got some resources around Wingspan, for example. But my last question is, what is your favorite part about board gaming in the education space?
I love playing with my students. I mean, tabletop games are really fun to play, and I love watching my students enjoy the games and learn something from them. It's really cool to see students get really excited about a game. And when I taught English, it seems as a language, I would see students that were normally shy in class really open up in a game and start using their language. I'm like, wow, she can say a few more words than she maybe thinks she can. But yeah, I think that's the biggest thing, is really that. And then one thing that I think I've really been learning too that's really cool is hearing experiences from other teachers that I've helped or introduced the idea of tabletop games for learning. I just put together a board game crate for a teacher, and that's essentially they fill out a survey, and then I curate a selection of games for their classroom. And I'll be sending that off this week. So I'm super excited to hear how her students like the game and how she uses the game in her classes too.
I realize that this might just speak poorly of me as a student when I was in school, but I suspect that there is some value to board games in the classroom in the sense that it changes the context in which you view your teacher. I mean, there were a couple of teachers that I could point to and say that guy was really awesome. But for the most part, teachers are pretty boring, and they're fairly staid, and they present their stuff and you learn the stuff and then you go on with your life and you don't remember, 95% of your teachers. And it seems to me bringing out board games and actually playing, not just you students play this game while I sit at my desk and check my phone, like actually engaging with them would change that dynamic a lot. And I know that for me as a student, it would have made a pretty big difference. I mean, conceptually, I would recognize that my teachers like to do fun things, but I never saw it. And so it didn't matter. And, as a 39-year-old with 3 kids, I can rationalize those things. But as a 13, 14, 15-year-old kid in high school who's just trying to get through the day, my teacher was hardly my best friend, right? So
right.
It seems to me and I'm definitely interested in your take on this, changing that dynamic by introducing these games and these opportunities to actually play with your students would really help with that. And I think that's kind of what you touched on with Wavelength.
Yeah, and I guess there would be two things to this. And one, there's some data, maybe, data to back this up. I had pretty high what do you want to call it, survey responses on how I was as a teacher at the university. So my students liked me, and I did use games. That was a part of who I was as a teacher. And then one thing I really like, Jonathan Cassie, he does the Game Level Learn podcast. He no longer does that, and he's doing a new one, but I can't remember the title. But he says this idea of swinging for the fences, and even if you don't knock it out of the park, your students are going to notice that you are swinging for the fences for them. You are trying to do something innovative or engaging for them in your learning environment.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely.
Cool. Well, I think that that's all I have. Anisha, do you have anything that you would like to add?
Not really. I kind of feel like I've at least temporarily exhausted my possible experience of education with board game. No, I really, because we kind of hit summer, and I'm like, okay, I don't have to explicitly think about that right now, because we are homeschooling one of our kids, and so as someone who's only taught in a very amateur way before, this year has been a big learning experience for me, and one of the things I learned is that I need to put together a sort of large-scale lesson plan sometime in the next month before school starts, so that I know where we're going.
If you have questions, I'm happy to help, too.
Well, fortunately, if you're struggling and you feel a little bit burned out about how to properly apply board games to your, you know, teaching process, I think that I have a resource for you.
I think we might just know of one or two. Yeah.
So Dustin, I suspect you know the same resource. Where would people go if they wanted to maybe bone up on what they're doing for game schooling?
Yeah, I appreciate the pitch. I would say just our website's the best, boardgamewitheducation.com, and then there is a newsletter there about halfway down the page. If you're curious about the brick and mortar store or other things that are kind of more behind the scenes, we have a YouTube channel and Instagram and TikTok and Facebook, all that good stuff. But I'm probably mostly active on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube.
All right. And the handles for all those things are at boardgamingwitheducation.com?
Just at boardgamewitheducation.
At boardgamewitheducation. Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Well, Anitra, where can people find us on the internets?
Well, you can find us on all of those social media, Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and, yes, TikTok, at Family Gamers AA. You can find our YouTube channel, but you're going to have to search for the Family Gamers or click through from a snap review on our website, thefamilygamers.com.
All right. If you want to send us any direct feedback, you can always email us, andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
Anitra@thefamilygamers.com.
If you want to look totally awesome as you go back to school this fall, you can wear some super sweet Family Gamers merch. You can get to that by going to thefamilygamers.com.
All the cool kids are wearing Play Games With Your Kids t-shirts.
It's true. It's true they are.
Or at least our cool kids are.
We had to buy those for them, though. I know. The Family Gamers podcast is sponsored by First Move Financial. Go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to learn how the team at First Move Financial can help you pile up the victory points.
I think that's going to be it for this week.
All right. Dustin, thank you so much for coming on and talking about all the crazy stuff that you're doing. I didn't know the brick and mortar store was in the works, so that's pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, I just announced it on Monday, so yeah. But thank you both for having me on. This was a lot of fun.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we're going camping this weekend.
Yes.
So it's going to be pretty interesting. We're going to play a whole bunch of games.
Yes, we are.
All right. And fun. For everybody else out there, until next week,
play games with your kids.